outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gen.
Well, we're going to try something new today, because Kyle and I got in a conversation last week. Just we were talking about some things, and he had some things on his heart. He'd really love to communicate with young men. And I said, well, what would be three of those? And he started shooting them at me, and we got into a bit of a started to discuss something and thought, you know what? That would be a fun podcast, given the gender wars of the day and the struggle people have with what belongs where these days. We thought that'd be fun. And then for two men to cover that without covering the other side of it would just be unfortunate. So I tagged onto my friend, my dear friend, Tessa Van Wade, who is the author of Out of the Shadows. She was on a few weeks ago when we talked about her book releasing. How's that going, by the way, Tessa? Are you having fun with a new book in the world?
Yeah, I'm having really fun. A lot of fun. But, you know, there's a lot of work, too, in the sense that I'm still working on the third book right now. I just handed in the second book to you. And so there's going to be work there, too. So a writer's work is never finished.
What's some of your favorite emails that you've gotten from the new book?
I had actually somebody pull me aside the other day when I was in LA, and she pulled me aside and she said, she actually started crying, and I'm like, oh crap, she didn't like the book. But then I was like, okay, wait, she wouldn't pull me aside like that. But I love how our first instinct is that, right?
Yeah, right. Always. They hate me.
But anyway,
I don't even know what I did wrong.
I don't know. But funny that you even bring that up, because she felt as though I was kind of speaking to her about her identity and where she just was having a struggle fitting. She's in a relationship that's not good for her, and it's hard to get out. She's struggling with, how do I find myself enough to know what's right? And she said that it was like some of the scenes that she read through, she had just finished it the morning before, some of the scenes she read through, it was like I was writing what she was feeling at that moment. And I looked at her and I said, you know what? It's because I struggled with literally the exact same thing, except for just not in relationship to a significant other, but just in finding my identity without the breadth of what I was raised in. You know, having anxiety about where to take my life now, you know, just all sorts of things. So that was the coolest thing.
I know when we first started talking about the book, Tessa, you were telling me you thought you had some things on your heart that women, young women especially, could know about identity that would be helpful to them. And you created this Willow Remy character, which is hard to understand if you haven't read it. So order the book and read it. As I read the book, I found a lot of things in Willow Remy that related to me. That wasn't directly aimed at women at all. There's a whole lot of our identity struggles, particularly this idea of you spend your whole life, even though you're only in your 20s, but you think you're one thing. And then you begin to find out there's a world that exists that you had no idea existed and that you're part of it. And that's kind of the premise of the story. And then to figure out who I am. Am I this, what I've always been told I am? Or am I this, what I'm now being told I am, and part of me resonates with both, and I'm caught between two worlds? And to me, that's the gift of that book. Not just the plot is a great read, just for the fun of reading, and a high-spirited adventure novel. But what goes on inside of Willow Remy through this book and the next, I just think are captivating, and not specifically for women. So guys, this is a book. If you like adventure stuff, this is a great read.
I've had a lot of responses from men as well. So, you know, and I don't know that I ever wrote this specifically for men, male or female. For me, gender is kind of, you know, I've always grown up super into action movies. I do jujitsu. I'm a purple belt in jujitsu. I've been doing it for 7 years. I'm really into that. Yet there's this part of me that's extreme. I love all things romance. I think we get caught up on gender a little bit too much, and we just need to see what the story is to tell you about you right now.
Yeah, that's good. Hey, by the way, the book's Out of the Shadows. If you haven't read it yet, man, get a copy and give it a read. You'll find it exciting. Let's go back to where we started this. Kyle, you're sitting there quietly nodding your head about, you enjoy the book, Tessa's book? Let me throw that at you first.
I did. However, I'm a bit resentful, and that's why I've been trying to sit back here, because I'm married to the publisher, And for some reason, Wayne, you've got the copy before I've gotten the second or the copy of the second book. And I mean, Tessa crafts a masterful story in the first book, but it leaves it again. Here's another cliffhanger. We just, Wayne and I just got done recording a podcast that would have aired last week. And we were talking about cliffhangers.
He didn't like the last cliffhanger from My Friend Lewis.
Yes. I had a hard time with the My Friend Lewis cliffhanger and really struggled with that. So we were fighting over that, and Out of the Shadows, that's been a lot of the feedback that I've gotten from friends that I've given the book out to is, are you really going to make me wait a year? Like, please don't make me wait a year. You know, like it's so good. Yeah. And I love the battle between this is how I perceive myself. This is the vision or the lens that I have had of myself. And then all of a sudden that lens got shattered. And now I have to figure out, how do I navigate this? How do I negotiate now that I've had a greater awakening, or there's been a renewing of my mind and my perspective on who I am and in reference to the world around me and in reference to what's going on around me? Now what do I do with that? How do I work through that? I strongly agree, Wayne, that that's something that is true to humanity. No matter who you are or no matter where you are from, your cultural background, gender identity, that conversation of, as I'm growing in my understanding of who I am, how do I navigate some of those tensions of, I see this beautiful picture that people say, this is what you could aspire to be, or this is the world has more to offer. And yet I also have this previous lens that, whether it be my community or culture or family, has previously given me. I've lived in that. And so how do I embrace the new, or how do I grow into a bigger picture of who I am as a person?
Well, and I think the biggest thing is that I had so much resistance in the sense of, am I right? Am I wrong? What's going on? Like, like fear, that fear-based resistance that we constantly find ourselves battling. And I mean, we oftentimes are a culture of fear. We're afraid of people who are different from us. We're afraid of being different. We're afraid of being the same. We're afraid of finding the fact that we are all innately the same. If we actually got rid of all the layers of who we are and we actually got down to our true self, we are children of God. That is what we are. And it's a matter of being able to stop resisting. And how do we do that?
And I think the kingdom implications are really significant here. Because for me, when I read the book, I grew up in religion, so God was always a thing. Worldview and trying to interpret who I am inside of all that. But for me, the transition from living to appease God to earn his love and living loved was finding a whole new Wayne in there. That the Wayne I thought I was before was mostly about fear and coping mechanisms and, you know, manipulating things to get what you need from other people. It was all of that. And it wasn't really the real Wayne, though at the time I would have thought it was.
Right.
And then when you start living inside the love of a father whose validation sets to rest the need to get it from other people, and your coping mechanisms are not as essential as they were, and your need to manipulate people is no longer important, then you begin to discover who you really are. And there are those moments where you feel like there's two different gravities pulling at me. There's what I thought I was and what I seem to be or what God seems to be saying I am. And watching one fade as the other one takes more center stage is just a delightful experience. And I think it's one we all go through. So Kyle, back to your discussion earlier, there are things that you had on your heart you would really love to communicate to young men. You feel like particularly some of the young kids, maybe the ones at home in their mom's basement at 24 playing video games. I don't know, but you had some things on your heart. And I thought it'd be fun to kind of, what would you say to young men, the young men that you're aware of that are kind of struggling with life?
One was to cultivate a life of genuine adventure. Two, to learn how to use your strength to encourage and empower the world around you. And it's time to reengage. Especially in the counseling world that I work in, the percentage of clients that I work with that do not have a positive adult role model in their life is substantial. In fact, I had one client that their best friend was their father, And that was the first time in almost 2 years of working in education that I had a client that could point to their father and say, no, that's, they're my best friend. We do everything together. We like, I can't wait to be more like him. I aspire to be him. And that was the first time in almost 2 years that I had heard a young adult even think about referring to their father in that way. And so it's, these things aren't, I think, specific to males by any means, but in my work with males and my work with young guys that are in the adulting process or are preparing to graduate from high school, those are three things that really stood out to me. Kind of the snapshots that came to mind as I was reflecting back on the young men that I've worked with over the last 5-10 years.
Okay, so capturing a heart for adventure,
yep,
was one of those things, right? And then encourage and empower people around you?
So learning to use your strength to encourage and empower.
Instead of what? Instead of what? What do most people do with their strengths?
There is a perspective of unhealthy masculinity that has come out of some very genuine cultural experiences where we lived in a male-dominated society, where strength was used to diminish other people, was used to get ahead of other people, was used to maintain and control power. And yet there is a strength that has been given to humanity. But speaking to young guys, look, you do have a strength that the world needs, but it's not to gain for you personally. It's not to control more power. It's not to put other people down. It's to encourage. It's to inspire. It's to protect. And it's to empower others to be able to live a more wholehearted life.
So we could use the word exploit, right?
Correct. Exploitation.
And the last one was to re-engage?
Yes, it's time to re-engage. That staying checked out and shutting down, not being a part of whether it be the parenting process, not being a part of their relational community, when the vast majority of any of your downtime is captured by primarily either focusing on a cell phone screen or a TV screen, and the maximum type of interpersonal engagement that they have is through a set of gaming headphones that they're yelling at somebody else that is not potentially not even in the same country as you. That's not emotional and relational engagement. Yes, it can be fun. Absolutely. Am I currently wearing a set of gaming headsets that I use for gaming and connecting with people? Yes, I am. But to have that as the dominant way that you spend your time, some sociologists are looking at the tail end of the millennial generation and the up and coming iGen, and they're deeply concerned about whether or not the population is even going to be able to continue itself because of the lack of actual direct human interaction that's taking place.
Well, Tessa, I know you've been through some real transitions in your life and still going on, some really neat things that you and I have talked about more personally. What would the Tessa of today love to say to her younger self?
I think the biggest thing is that I have a tendency to listen to people outside of myself way too much. And I have done that all my life. And I wish that I had kind of listened to myself a little bit more and been able to kind of stand strong in who I am a little bit more. But as youth, I think a lot of times we don't really know how to do that. I mean, we've got parents to guide us. We've got, you know, some of us don't have parents to guide us. And I think that looking back, I spent so much time constantly changing myself for this person and this person and this person and this person. And it's just a constant. And I still do it to a certain degree, but it's more like the maturity as I've gotten older, or just kind of dealing with some of the demons. I've had to kind of let some of that go.
Isn't what you'd love to say to young women? I mean, I don't know if you interact with a lot of younger people like Kyle does that are unmotivated and kind of feeling lost in the culture.
Yeah, I have children who are probably around the age that you're dealing with. I have had a lot of my daughter's friends, my daughters are coming into me and saying, hey, this person's saying that she really has a troubled home life. I have experienced this with my daughter. She'd come home, tell me this person is really not knowing how to deal with other people because she's going through a home life that's really hard. And yeah, I mean, I deal with it in that sense. I also have my daughters who are trying to seek out who they are at this moment and struggling with the same things that I did, except for now we have an accentuation of we've got social media and we've got this and that. But here's what I will tell you is I moved my kids over to Hawaii. And one thing about Hawaii is it is not a big social media platform kind of place. My kids are not even on social media. They don't care about it. They're not asking for it. They see it as a difficult thing to deal with. So my kids are like, I don't want it. I don't want to have people looking and being able to like my stuff and being able to say, yes, this is you're good because you did this picture well. They don't want that. I deal with a little bit more adult aspect of life and being a personal trainer. But even going to the book, there are some very obvious things that I was dealing with in the book with Remy and Willow, trying to find out who you are, being thrust into a new vision of what life was when you had this tunnel vision. And then suddenly you expand your vision and become more diverse and start to see the world in a bigger, how do you deal with that? And then the straight and narrow that you were taught over here.
We've been listening to a Mars Hill podcast, Kyle and I, that Christianity Today is doing about the rise and fall of Mars Hill. And the last one, the only one out now for a while, because they've gotten behind or something, but it was about manning up, right? It was Mark Driscoll was really, what I would look back at and say a toxic masculinity, but it's a masculinity that's very much encouraged in religious kind of environments. The man's the head of the home, the complementarian view of the wife's just there. Men need to lead in society and men, and men need to be powerful and they need to get their way and they need to, he turned out to be a very abusive man. So almost encouraging, put your family under your thumb and be responsible for this and that. What I would describe is incredibly toxic. And it seems that for the most part, as I listened to the things you were saying today, and even the things you were sharing, Tessa, both, I don't see a difference between what young men and young women need.
I don't either.
You have a focus on young men, Kyle, because you work with them. But do you think that these things are unique to the masculine gender at all? Or in what ways would they be if you thought they were?
That's a tough one. So, for example, when we're looking at the masculinity of Mark Driscoll and the last episode that he just did and the toxic masculinity in that direction, if I would have been 20, like 18 to my 18 to 22 year old self would have completely and totally been drawn and gravitated to what Mark Driscoll was pushing.
Me too.
Because my culture and my background reflected more of what C.S. Lewis said, you castrate the stallion and then say, go and be fruitful. Basically, you chop the balls off the guy and then say, go and have a good life.
Let's keep it PG-13 here, please.
Yeah. So my experience was, in order to be a good Christian, you're a nice guy. You never ripple the waters. You don't cultivate adventure. You have no strength to offer the world. You don't create any kind of conflict. That was the perspective of masculinity that I had been sold and was like, ugh. No, I don't want that. Now, I also saw an example of what of similar to what Mark Driscoll lived. And so for me, my journey was very much about, Lord, I don't know what masculinity looks like. How do I be a dude in today's world? And I don't want to be super passive. I don't want to be like have any strength or anything like that. But I also don't want to be abusive and use my strength to exploit others. I don't want to be that way either. And so what does that look like? I feel like both guys and girls are asking that identity question. I think there might be some different themes, like in my work with teenage girls versus my themes and some of the things that I work with teenage guys on. Some of the questions are the same and some of the questions are a little different.
I don't know the names that you were just using, but when you were 19 years old and you said you would have really eaten it up, whatever the person was that was saying, well, I'll tell you, being a 19 years old woman, I would have watched you guys eat it up. And I would have, in the background that I have had, I would have fell for it hook, line, and sinker and continued to go down my rabbit hole of I need to like be quiet and sit in the back and not say a word. The problem is that we do emphasize gender too much. And the reality of it is, if we can really, really get into the heart of God, is the heart of God masculine? Is the heart of God feminine? Or does it have both? What are we dealing with here? You know? And so I'll give you an example of a way that the whole masculine and feminine really kind of did Ben and I my husband and I a disservice in our marriage. We tried really hard because of what was put on us. We tried really, really hard to do the man goes to work and I stay home with the kids and I do this and that. But here's what you need to know about me is I'm an entrepreneur. I have a spirit of work ethic. I have so many ideas to do this and do that and do that. And I'm a go-getter. So I'll go out and I'll do it. On the other hand, Ben is actually loves doing the tasks at home. He's a carpenter. He loves doing work that way. There's a term that they use in HR in business where it's setting somebody up for failure. It's promoting somebody to failure. And so one thing that I think we did for years is we promoted ourselves to failure in the sense of I have to stay home and he needs to go to work. And what happened is as soon as we decided, we sat down, we said, hey, this is not working the way it's going. Let's have you try. I was getting busier and busier as a personal trainer. So we decided we needed somebody home with the girls. So he did the stay-at-home mom or dad thing for 5 years. And my girls got to experience this amazing relationship with their father. They got to experience this completely different mindset that I had of watching their mom do all this work and succeed and do this and that. And so they never had that perspective that I had, that they have to, they've never even thought twice about them going out and having a job and, or having a husband take care of them. Or there's never been that role thought in their head because they've had parents. Well, and I will tell you, we got a lot of flack for that. We were judged very harshly for what we did for just having that different shape shift. But I will tell you, in our marriage, it was a beautiful thing because we suddenly promoted ourselves to success.
We had something similar, smaller way. I was taught the first church I pastored at, the man had to be responsible for the finances, had to keep the books, couldn't give that to his wife because it would undermine his authority in the family and all that stuff. Well, I'm not a detail person. Balancing a checkbook for me is probably be what hell would be for most people. I don't understand it. Sarah thrives in it. So from early on, Sarah's run our finances. And I mean, we talk about it. We make decisions together. But man, she runs with that. And I welcome her to do it. And I was embarrassed to tell people for a long time, particularly in the churches where I was at, like, what, you what? No, and the man's got to be. I wonder how many of these notions of masculinity and femininity, which is kind of where I hope this would go a little bit, how much of that, particularly in a religious framework, has some validity?
Jess and I are very similar in that regard as well. I had a very authoritarian upbringing where my dad was the very strong, you know, role model, working, everything orbits around his world type of a home situation. When Jess and I came together, Jess did not have that background at all. And I said, that's not something I want to carry into my marriage. And I actually, as a teenage guy, I was criticized a lot. There was a lot of question marks about, well, what is your sexuality? And like, you've got to be gay because you're not willing to have a girlfriend in the fifth grade. And, oh, you like to cook and you like things other than just football and watching sports on TV? Yeah, I do. Yep, I do. And that's, it took years for me to be at peace with the fact that there was a diversity to my expression of who I am as a guy in today's world. Jess and I ebb and flow a lot in regards to who does what in our marriage. And there's been times where I've been more at home and Jess has been more at work. And there's been times where I've been more at work and Jess has been more at home. I think a lot of the boxes that were placed around what is masculine and what is feminine has caused a lot of confusion and pain in people's lives. Because it said, well, you have to be X, Y, and Z in order to be masculine, or you have to be X, Y, and Z in order to be feminine. And there hasn't been a permission for us to live out of the God-given identity that we have, whatever that looks like. If you have an interest that might not align with masculinity or femininity, or you have characteristics, however that might look, there's been a lot of flack, a lot of challenge, a lot of criticism, and made it more difficult for people to navigate and know and to have that permission to live loved, to be able to live authentically out of who God's created them to be. Now, I think that there are, if you get into the neuroscience and neuropsychology, guys actually process information in a different part of the brain than the women do. Guys actually have less, in general, have less neural connections between the two hemispheres than girls do. And so there's some basic psychological structure that is different between the way that guys process and the way that girls process information and the way that they perceive life. And so, yes, I think there is some validity to some of those things, but I think a lot of the characteristics and a lot of the quote unquote boxes that we placed around gender roles has actually been more detrimental to people being able to live a wholehearted life than it has been beneficial.
We lose some of the authenticity of who we are.
When we start fitting roles.
Yeah, absolutely. We lose some of the authenticity of who we are. You know, there's a whole reason that my job is called a personal trainer. And I'll tell you every day, I have people that come in, same body structure as everybody else, but there's always these minor little differences that make their body react a little bit different to this injury than this person's body. I can have somebody who has the same rotator cuff injury that can do shoulder presses that somebody else cannot do shoulder presses. And we, our authenticity lies within what God's experience with us is. Me, Tessa, what God's experience is with me, the oneness between me and God, that is my authenticity. And as soon as we start applying outside societal norms and this and that to this, then we lose some of the authenticity and we don't even seek it. At that point, we're so entrenched in this one pathway of thinking that we don't even see our authenticity. We don't even see how to get there. And so we get lost and we get stuck in this one pathway of thinking. And that's a scary place to be. It's a sad place to be. And I want everybody to find that their authenticity lies in breaking through those barriers of thought. Think outside of where you thought before.
Yeah, so much of our culture, and I think the religion has definitely been a big part of this, has put so much identity into gender or sexuality. When really, when you talk beneath that to people, 90% of what we are, our hopes and dreams and aspirations and fears and struggles, has nothing to do with those two things.
Nothing.
That's a factor, but it's not even a major factor. And yet in some segments of our culture, it's everything. When I grew up in the 50s and 60s, man, the line between male and female was clear. Women hardly worked out of the home. It just fought for the right to vote. I mean, just the way you look at some of those old series positioned back in the 60s, the Leave It to Beavers and the, you know, whatever, you go, gosh, that's a very different world. The lines were drawn very distinctly. And if you didn't fit those as a man or a woman, you really, it was a problem. You had to pretend you fit them. We have a society now in which those lines are more blurred than ever, which I think in many ways is a good thing. I know other people think it's not a good thing. Men of God need to be this way and women of God need to be that way. I'm not there because I know too many individuals to say that woman being all that God's called her to be doesn't fit the female stereotype. And same way with a guy who's different set. You know, he doesn't like taking off his shirt and sitting in the woods, smoking a cigar, shooting animals. You know, that's not his thing. And it doesn't have to be his thing. But yet we have a world where that's more blurred than ever. And yet the predominant issue today in a lot of places is transgender, non-binary. It's that whole wrestling with gender and who I am and what I am. And I know what has freaked out a lot of the conservative religious crowd. Is there some threat to ourselves because the world is seeing masculinity and femininity differently?
Everything that we don't know and don't experience ourselves is a threat. And that is how we are made. That's not how we're meant to be. That's how fear has shaped us. One of my biggest things that I tell my daughters every single day is if there is something that you do not know about, then you have no say in it until you can seek it out yourself, learn it, talk it, be with people who have that experience, and then you can have an opinion about it. But you cannot have an opinion until you are ready to head on attack that fear, because that's all you're thinking right now is fear. those are the only thing, that's the only thing shaping your opinion of this right now. And I will tell you, you know, I hesitate to even tell this story. One of my daughter's best friends in sixth and seventh grade was transgender. That was a lovely experience for my daughter. And I'll tell you why. Because we got to know her mom. We got to be friends with her and really sit down with her. And my husband said, let's have a conversation about this. I want to know. I want to know what's going on. And I will tell you that she was very honest with us and she was very open with us about this. From the very first moment that she was born, she could not stand that she had a male body. From the time that she could even say anything, she could not stand it and said, I dream as a girl. She would move as a girl. She would do everything as a girl. The reason I even bring this up is because if you have not experienced something with someone, there's really not a place for us to speak of it because we're going to be speaking out of fear. It's a lot. It's a lot to take in.
It is, especially for a Christian community that harkens back to a simpler, nostalgic day when everything was cleaner and clearer and just wish everybody would conform. But there's no ability to have compassion when your primary aim is to have conformity, right, is to push people into certain things.
Right.
I wonder at some point, you know, in our generation, it was long hair, girls wearing pants. That was the big challenge. It was going to put society in horrible things. And then, you know, it was tattoos eventually, where everybody's getting tattoos and the parents are going, oh my God, our kids are doing that. And now you wonder how much of this non-binary transgendered stuff is just that youthful struggle. Some of it's real. Absolutely. I don't feel like I fit in whatever societal norms are left. I don't even know which ones are left. The way to healing there is compassion alongside people, not pressing conformity norms from above. And yet so many of my Christian friends think the answer is pushing conformity norms from above.
Right.
And that will right the ship instead of, no, let's crawl into people's pain and struggle and joy, and let's see what God makes sense of in people's hearts instead of us trying to figure it out for him.
But if you don't walk into something with love in your heart and there's fear, then we're on the wrong path. We've got to go back. What are we fearing right now? What are we resisting right now? Why is there fear there? Is it because of my lack of knowledge? Usually it's because I haven't taken the effort to go out and really embrace. And that's the scariness of kind of sitting in your little box of what you believe to be right and wrong. There's so much about being right and wrong that we forget that everybody's experience is personal. Personal.
Tessa, you talked about a really important cue that Ben did, and he sat down and he had a genuine curiosity for discovery. It was a relational curiosity that disarms fear. I just want to discover more of who you are and what makes you tick and what brings you to life. And I think of the relationships that are in my life. I think of my friend Lewis and the way or Language of Healing Wayne and the different relationships that have changed your life. That's always one of my big questions with clients that are struggling with a similar topic of the fear about somebody who's navigating a different life conversation is, who do you know and who have you done journey with? Who in your close circles are having those conversations that you've walked through those with them that are, you're still in a process of discovery with them about?
My biggest thing, my biggest pet peeve is when people want to put themselves in a place where they don't have to think differently, when they have to sit and this person looks like them and this person thinks like them. My biggest goal in life is to surround myself with people who think differently so I do not have to sit and become this robot. I need people to remind me that I'm wrong, that I'm different. I need to find that empathy and that ability to see the human race as just one big fat example of God's love.
And if you have a Jesus who wouldn't walk people through anything, meet them in the midst of anything, if your primary view of Jesus is he came to conform society to a norm he and his father wanted, I think you've already missed who Jesus is. And that's not saying he validates everything everybody wants to do. I mean, there's obviously things God says are out of bounds. But helping people discover who they really are in him will walk them out of those out of bounds places and into where he needs to be. And if you don't have a Jesus who will walk with people there, then you will feel like somehow you're compromising to love someone who isn't, like you said, thinking or doing the same thing you think they should think or do. And we diminish ourselves, and I think we diminish the kingdom when God's not big enough to walk anybody through anything into the light that's going to change their lives. But that's his doing, not ours. And if he can walk with them, then why can't we? With that same curiosity and that same love, and see what happens. As you're growing up, run into like conventional norms of male and female that was awkward for you? I mean, Kyle, you're the prototypical Wyoming male, shoots guns and rides horses and does cattle. So did you ever run against any of that that just felt awkward for you or you just had to fit in with?
I love to dance. I love to cook. And I don't think about sex every 5 minutes. That one, I never could connect with it. I would sit down in those stupid youth group meetings with guys, and the constant assumption is that the guy thinks about sex every 5 seconds of his life. And if he's not, then he's just lying. That is not me. That's been something that Jess and I have had to navigate. And honestly, like, it might come across my radar maybe every 72 to, 3 to 4 days, maybe. And Jess and I have a great sex life, but that was never on my radar. And it was, so that was a really weird one when they're talking about like this constant like thought of sexuality or of like the constant temptation of looking at pornography. I find I'm visually attracted to women. Yes, absolutely. That is part of who I am as a person. I still find that incredibly attractive, incredibly beautiful. But it was always different for me. I could never resonate with them on that one. And that's been something I've fought tooth and nail with the conservative Christian culture on.
I see the passion there. Tessa, what about you?
Ben's very similar to you, Kyle, though, in that sense. And I think that that is a very typical, I think that's very, very the same with us. We had the same weird experience of men always, it's always the woman who wears the wrong thing. And you're suddenly men are thinking the worst. And I remember being like, wait a minute, like, this is not jiving with our marriage at all. Like, this is just totally different. But I had a dad who wanted me to stay in the house and wash dishes and clean the house. And then he would take the boys out and they would do the dirty work that was outside. And I always wanted to be out there riding the lawnmower. I always wanted to be doing the stuff that was out there and super active and all of this. And so, yeah, I mean,
it's amazing the passion this brings out of people.
I know. Well, because we were entrenched in something that is not our authentic self. And we are passionate about getting outside of what we were told that we are. And we want to find that authentic self. And that is exactly why I was going through the same things with Remy in that book, is because I'm telling you, in the last few years, I have truly been on a path of finding my authentic voice. And you don't know how many times I've been afraid of being canceled and being scared of loving anybody I want to love.
Wow. I don't think I hit up against anything like that growing up. You know,
really?
I fit into, yeah, like even the example you use, my mom and dad were woman's works inside, man's works outside, and we grew up on a farm. And so we had yard work, blah, 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 blah. But we never had to iron clothes. And mom had 4 boys. So mom never had any help inside, except we had to dry dishes. That was the one thing we had to rotate in doing. But other than that, inside work was woman's work. Outside work was man's work. But I liked the outside work. So I was fine with that. My nickname was Jane in high school because a substitute teacher called me Jane Wakeupson by mistake in 8th grade. And Jane landed. So that was like the boy named Sue. That was tough. I think the only time I ever run the norm, I was telling Kyle this the other day, on a hot, hot day on a golf course, man, I think wearing a skirt would be great for playing golf. I just, it'd be so much cooler.
That's funny. No, I've had a lot of places. I mean, I was told not to speak loudly, and we weren't supposed to do a lot of the masculine stuff. So I've really struggled with that because I felt so differently within, but had to abide by this vision of who I was supposed to be as a woman. That was really tough for me. I had to really give up a lot of my expectations of myself. Honestly, I think that one of the coolest things you'd ever do is talking to our best friends, Chris and David, who have this amazing, loving relationship. They've been married for a long time and gay couple. And it's so interesting when we're best friends with them. We go over to their house all the time. And the stories, what they have had to deal with, honestly, to break my heart. Talk about the expectations of being something that you are not, never being able to feel as though you could show your true authentic self. So what do you have? You have demons of just constantly being said, no, you don't get to show that. You don't get to do that. I'm telling you, when you step outside of your fear and your comfort zone and you just go in with arms open wide, no judgment, let's leap into love. There's some amazing things that come out of it. I've known some of the most confident people in the entire world, and I just wasn't that. I just was naturally a very insecure person, afraid to have a voice. I still struggle with having a voice. I'm still afraid of having a voice a little bit, and I have to battle that demon a lot. That's where, you know, Remy and Willow, that really is where a lot of that came from, is you've got Willow who's like, I see that person that Remy was. There's no way I can be that. What are you telling me? I cannot do that. But then at some point, she starts to feel it. And once she has that feeling of letting go of that resistance, she gets to feel it for a second. And then I think that there's no way, once you feel that lack of resistance, once you feel that freedom, there's no way to walk away from that freedom. There's no way to suddenly go back into hiding. It is only out of the shadows from there, because you've got that freedom. You can't feel the freedom for just a little bit and not want more of it.
Well, I'm super intrigued, Tessa, because when I think of personal trainer, I think of almost in some regards a therapist. I know. But like, I think That's of right. almost in some regards as a therapist for people who are coming for personal training, and the amount of body issues, self-confidence, I mean, mental health stuff that you navigate in your field, and for you to be able to authentically walk through that with them, like, that awesome. And yet, like, myself, my curiosity self is like, how? What is your life story that moved you into that space to where you could be with your clients and be as successful as you are? Because if you weren't able to move out of that authentic self, your clients would feel that, and I don't think you'd be as successful of a personal trainer as you have been.
Well, the very first thing that you have to do is stop all judgment when people walk in the door. And my first instinct is not to tell them what I believe and who I am and what I do. They are not there for that. They are simply there for me to see them. And there's a difference between looking at them and their physical being and seeing them for what they need and who they are. That when somebody walks through my door, if I do not have the intuition and I do not allow my ego to fall away and absorb who they are, then I'm never going to be successful with them. I think I naturally had a tendency to have intuition for people and to see people. I think that's one thing that I do see that I have a gift for, I guess you could say. But I think that everybody can do it if they just drop their ego. I think we walk into a conversation going, what am I going to get out of this? When really it should be, how do I leave myself over here to just exist in this space with this person as they are, who they are, and how we can just come together in complete freedom?
That's where labels have really hurt us, right? We can't treat people as individuals. We've got certain labels we prefer, and we're trying to move people. Are they in that or outside that label? And if they're outside that, how do we move them in that label? Religion has done that in spades to most of us, and warp society in a way that we just can't love people for where they are, right where they are. And like you say, see them for that and go from there. So, hey, thank you too for wandering down this rabbit hole with me.
Yeah. It's a lot.
I think the whole masculinity, femininity thing is so warped in our culture that's causing all kinds of disservice to people.
I agree.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.